Welcome back to another episode of the Packs, which she said podcast after a long hiatus. I am Maggie Loney, joined as always by Perry Goldstein, and we're here to talk about free agency. Perry is settled into her new job. I am settled into my new house, which is why I have nothing in my background. And now we're ready to settle in for another season of Packers football. We made it, honestly, through the dead zone, which was kind of the goal. And now we're here to talk about free agency. And pretty soon the draft kicking off in Green Bay. So Perry, how you doing? It's been a while.
I know. I'm so happy to see your face. If anyone's not watching on YouTube and is missing out on Maggie Loney's beautiful face, like, I'm so sorry. I'm so glad to be talking about real football. I kind of always forget every year after the Super Bowl how short the like real NFL offseason is, because the NFL is not off for very long. Free agency frenzy was so real this week, and we're going to go straight into the draft, and then it's going to be, you know, back to training in no time. So I'm excited to talk about it. It felt so good. I was working from home on Monday, and I had NFL Network on in the background all day with all the updates. It was great. So yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we can talk about surprises, reactions, all of those things. But so far in free agency, at the time at least of recording, we're doing this on Thursday evening. So we'll see if anything shakes out in the next couple of days. But the first wave is kind of upon us at this point. Everything has happened. The Packers have lost TJ Slayton. He has gone to the Bengals. Eric Stokes went to the Raiders, and then AJ Dillon went to the Eagles on a one-year deal, and Josh Myers signed a one-year deal with the Jets. So I don't know about you. I kind of personally thought they would consider bringing back Josh Myers on a cheap-ish deal, but otherwise not entirely surprised by those losses.
So that's funny that you say that, because the one that I was surprised by was actually TJ Slayton, not the rest of them.
I had hoped they would bring him back, yeah, of all of them.
I just felt like of all of them, like contributions wise, he was the one that actually made any, like, he's a rotational D lineman, right? Like, let's not, you know, put too much on TJ Slayton, but like meaningful contributions for like the role that he played and for what, a fifth round pick. I mean, I think they got good usage out of him, but they must feel like they have who they need in that room, and it just wasn't worth bringing him back. Naturally, we saw they paid Kenny. So maybe they felt like they didn't want to pay them both. And I believe they brought in a new D-line coach this offseason. So it could also be that this new coach didn't feel like the fit was quite right. That's always a possibility as well. So I was a little disappointed in that, but the rest of them didn't surprise me.
Yeah, and TJ Slayton, I think it might have been, you know, it was Acme Packing or Packers Wire. They all do really good work, but TJ Slayton has not been a fit for this new Packers defense for quite a while. He's just like bigger than the guys that Jeff Hafley likes to operate with. So he was great as a run stuffer, and I'm excited that he got paid in Cincy. Kind of made more than I necessarily thought that he would to stay in Green Bay. So that also helps, you know, go get your money where you can. But yeah, I see the Packers trying to get a little slimmer at the defensive line. So not entirely surprised there. So since Josh Myers is gone, obviously we thought center was going to be a priority for the Packers kind of going into this free agency cycle. Drew Dahlman was an option as, you know, the kind of the premier center on the market. He ended up, of course, going to Chicago. And I think surprisingly for Packers fans, Aaron Banks was kind of the first big name that the Packers acquired here in free agency, and not at center, at left guard. What were your initial impressions to see that when the Packers did dip their toes into spending, it was for a guard?
It just felt so Packers. It just felt so Packers. Like, yes, everyone's like waiting for the edge rusher or the cornerback, which obviously the cornerback came eventually. And they're like, actually, we're going to go get an interior offensive lineman, which, like, again, amazing, because, you know, I think I put this on Blue Sky, but investing in your line means investing in protecting Jordan Love. And that's priority 1A for this team at all costs. And they obviously liked what Aaron Banks brings to the table. And to your point, Maggie, they feel, and I think it's right, and we can, I think, dive into this a little bit on what the line's going to look like now, they feel that they have a center on their roster already. I think they do. They can slot in probably Elgton Jenkins, right, who played center in college, right into that spot and have a really strong line now with Aaron Banks and Sean Ryan and then the two tackles completing it out. So I love it for them. It cracked me up because it's just such an unsexy but super important position.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that there were a couple different ways that the Packers could have approached this. Like, you know, we said they could have gone for a guy like Drew Dahlman, paid him a ton of money to kind of lock up the center spot for the future. This is a really weak draft class for centers. So if your guy is not exactly where you want him, you're probably not going to get one. And then the Packers would have missed out. So I'm glad that they did something to address the position because I think going into the draft would have been the wrong move. But I also saw potential for them to take a guy like Ryan Kelly as like a 1 year, 2 year vet to kind of be your stopgap and then develop somebody on the roster. So the fact that it's funny, they both went in the division, you know, Kelly going to the Vikings, but I like this for the Packers. You can tell they feel really comfortable with the guys they have in house. They've got Jenkins, who we presume is going to be the center, but they really like Jacob Monk, I think, is the backup. We know how they feel about Zach Tom. I'm sure he wants to stay at right tackle and get tackle money next offseason for obvious reasons. But even Sean Ryan was taking snaps at center in training camp. So they have a ton of options. And I think what they did was just make sure that this was one less area of need going into the draft. Because again, it's not a strong class. And if you can upgrade your center position, I talked to Andy Herman about this on the radio a little bit a couple days ago. And he said that he thinks that Jenkins is one of those players that almost like gets bored at guard because he's just so good that like you kick him over to center and you give him more responsibility and it like rejuvenates how he gets to play. And he's such an intelligent football player that he's just going to thrive, I think, at center. And even if you have like a slight downgrade at left guard, you are elevating your center play, which is just going to make the rest of the line so much better. And yes, kudos to Jordan too now for getting that locked up.
Yeah. I have a few things I want to hit on. I agree with so much you said. I'm so glad you brought up a few of the backups. I mean, they did heavily invest in the draft last season. So you want to continue to develop those guys and potentially give them the opportunities if those come about. Now, we did see in the Philly game some of those opportunities, and it wasn't great, which I also think is why this was probably heavy on the brain for this front office to say, okay, if anything were to happen, maybe our depth isn't exactly where we'd love it to be and we need another bona fide starter. To your point about Elgton, you know, I think we talked a lot last season about this line, not necessarily knowing, you know, we believe Zach Tom is a star. We believe Elgton is a star. He's gotten paid like one, certainly. But there were a few weaker points, Josh Myers, I think, being the one. And if you really do feel like you have two guys who you can lean on as kind of that higher end, those higher end offensive linemen, then you want to build around them. And I don't know if you necessarily are building around a left guard, right? But you certainly build your line and your focal point around your center. So I agree with you that I love the move for Elgton to center, not just because it's his natural position, but I think because if he can strengthen that spot, which is super underrated and also a place where the Packers historically have had very high level play that I think has gotten really overlooked, I think this line is going to be better for it. And that's not to like diminish Aaron Banks in any way. He got paid clearly very well because the Packers obviously value him and value the left guard position, but more to say, that I think Elgton is going to do a lot to like elevate the line as a whole by being moved into that position.
And I think what the Packers did here was really smart too, because I mean, I don't know if this is like a hot take. I wouldn't think it is, but I feel like at this point, if the Packers were going to pay either of their tackles, they're paying Zach Tom. You know, Rashid Walker is still the unproven commodity. So even though left tackle might be a more premier position, technically, Zach Tom is the guy that's going to get the bag next offseason. And maybe the Packers prioritize both, but I think what they did here too, locking up left guard, ensures that you've either got Jordan Morgan, who has experience playing left tackle, who can come in and be your left tackle if you want to keep Sean Ryan at right guard, or if you're not too thrilled about Sean Ryan being your right guard, Jordan Morgan took snaps there, you know, rotated in before the injury at right guard, and you can keep Rashid Walker at left tackle. So what they've done is just kind of ensured that, like, wherever they need to plug and play these guys going into training camp, they have options. And I think that's kind of what the bank signing does. So smart move, I thought, by the Packers. And I know people were kind of surprised by maybe the contract numbers. 4 years, $77 million is quite a bit of money. I think it's technically more than what they paid last year for guys like McKinney and Jacobs, which is funny. But it like you said, protecting Jordan Love is like the most important thing you can do on this football team. And it'll mitigate a lot of potential other weaknesses that this roster might have. So yeah. I was happy with it. And the more I kind of dove into it, the more it really made sense to me on why they did it.
I don't think it's a hot take at all, by the way. The numbers, and again, I think this goes across the board, and I don't know if we're going to dive into like moves that happened outside of the Packers sphere, but I just felt like all the numbers were higher this free agency. Mm-hmm. I know everyone's been talking about the salary cap going up and that playing a role in it, and teams, you know, when your draft and develop doesn't work, like you unfortunately have to a little bit pay a premium to fill the hole that the draft leaves you. And we just at the top of this show named all the guys that they lost from their 2021 class. And so, yeah, you might have to, and I don't like calling it an overpay because I don't necessarily feel that way. Because like we said, we like the move, we like the signing, but it is high. But I think relative to what everyone is getting paid across free agency this offseason, it fit right in.
Yeah, I'm with you. So let's shift then and talk about the other free agent signing that the Packers have made so far. As we record, hopefully something fun happens, you know, tonight after we're done recording this one. But Nate Hobbs was the second signing, corner from the Raiders. It was funny because as it happened, on Pack-A-Day earlier, or I guess last week, Andrew and I talked about Nate Hobbs, and his market value on SpotTrack was like 1 year for $3 million, because he you know, primarily plays as a slot corner. So your expectation is like he'll come in for a year, see what he can do, and then maybe go get a big contract. The Packers clearly said we're just going to give him a big contract, and by all accounts, you know, I thought, oh, okay, they got their slot corner. It sounds like the Packers are interested in playing him everywhere. He probably will start on the boundary. Aaron Nagler had some reporting from Ryan Wood, and it looked like Bill Huber added to that as well, that Hobbs could end up being a boundary corner on early downs and then sliding into the slot on third down, maybe with a guy like Valentine coming in on the boundary. So really interesting pickup. I like it. I thought he was a really good football player. But curious to see him get some more looks at the boundary, because I only really know him as like a slot corner.
Yeah. I like this move. It surprised me also. I think there were a lot of cornerback names thrown around and he wasn't necessarily in the mix, but the more I dove into this one, I actually really like it. Mm-hmm. Also, the contract looks big, but it's really not. It's actually really 2 years of real money and two fake years, which is just like very Russ Ball. But so I don't actually, the numbers don't scare me as much as like the initial report came. When the initial report came out, I was like, whoa, they paid him. I think they paid him appropriately. He'll get 2 years to kind of show how he fits into the scheme. And I completely agree with you. I think in terms of scheme fit, it's great. We got to see Keyshawn Nixon on the boundary last season, and over the course of the season, he steadily improved. So the idea of having two guys who can, we'll see how Nate Hobbs does on the boundary, since that's not where he's naturally played. But in an ideal world, if what the Packers are thinking is we have two guys who can play both on the boundary and in the slot, and we can rotate them there, plus however we want to play our safeties, that gives Jeff Hafley a lot of versatility. And I think that's really exciting for the scheme and for this defense and like everything that he plans to do with them. So I like it. I like it a lot. He has the size to play on the boundary and just never has been asked to do it. So I think there's a big asterisk around like if he's capable of stepping into a role that he hasn't done before, but the ceiling is really high if he can.
Yeah. And I mean, he's super aggressive. He's a really good tackler. And I, to your point, yeah, he gives Halfley so many options. We kind of saw towards the later half of the season that he wants his three safeties out there when he can. And we're pretty positive that Evan Williams kind of locked up the floating spot next to Xavier McKinney. Javon Bullard coming into his sophomore season in the slot. You'd like to see some improvement there. He's certainly struggled at times, but it's a tough position to play, and it wasn't his natural home, you know, at Georgia. So it made sense that it would take some time for him to adjust at the NFL level. But when you've got your three safeties, you still got Oladapo, who hasn't played a ton. You know, they feel really good about that room. Nixon, again, wants to play boundary. You know, he said he wants to be like CB1. He doesn't want to worry about kick returns anymore. And this isn't even including Jair, which we don't know what's going to happen. First, it sounded like he was going to get traded. And then it seemed like maybe he was going to stick around. I know he welcomed Hobbs to the team through reports. So he's in communication with him. And I don't know if that is just because Jair's a good dude, but we'll see what happens. And, you know, all you're doing, like you said, is giving Jeff Halfley more pieces to play with. And he's got a ton of options when it comes to who plays where. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because this is a decent class for corners in the draft. And I certainly like that the Packers aren't banking on drafting someone now that they need to start, you know, week one. I think that's kind of the Hobbs move was, at first I thought it was insurance. And the more I dug into it, I was like, no, he's a player. Like he's really going to make a difference. And I think they'll still probably take someone either maybe like round three or day three at some point, because the room needs bodies. But I certainly feel much more comfortable about the secondary and where it stands with or without Jair after the Hobbs signing.
I agree. I would definitely like them to take a quarterback in this draft and make it a priority. It is a position that should always be a priority, quite frankly. I'm seconding everything. I definitely am curious what your thoughts on, do they like this move because of the scheme fit, or is there a little bit of, we've had so many rotational changes that we've had to make, guys who have had to play out of position. I don't want to call it PTSD, but I guess like adjustments to some of the things that they've had to deal with in their secondary, like if that was part of their thought process in making a move like this, going to get someone who can do both.
I think it's interesting because we talk, you know, ad nauseum every, just about this time of year in March and April before the draft, about how the Packers have yet to invest highly in a true nickel corner. You know, we always see them take guys that play the boundary and then slide them inside. And it's exactly, again, what happened with Bullard. He played a little bit in college, but he wasn't like a true slot player until he came to the Jeff Halfley defense. And then he kind of filled that role. So I thought when they made this signing, okay, they finally are making like a true investment in the slot. And I don't think that's the case. So I think kind of what they did is solidified the position, because we saw that it was a kind of an area of weakness for this defense throughout the season. And if Nixon wants to play on the boundary and that's where he's comfortable and that's where he looked good towards the, you know, the second half of the season, I do think that it kind of solidifies that spot if there are struggles.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think it was like the investment that I thought it would be, and like, oh my goodness, they're finally prioritizing that nickel spot.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if like the Jair uncertainty has like, I don't want to say changed, that feels like a very strong word, but informed their decision in a way, or if Nate Hobbs would have always been someone they would have gone after in this free agency class, you know, if Jair was unequivocally going to be playing on this team in 2025. That's what my question has been around this signing. We will never know.
No, we won't, which is kind of par for the course when it comes to how the Packers operate. But those are the two free agents, obviously, that the Packers have signed. Of course, they brought back some of their in-house players. They re-signed Isaiah McDuffie to kind of play that third inside linebacker role, the only remaining player from their 2021 draft class. They also brought back Brandon McManus, locked him up long-term. So the Packers have figured out their kicking position. Also signed all of their exclusive rights free agents. So like punter Daniel Whelan's back, along with guys like Emmanuel Wilson, Kadeem Telfort, Aaron Mosby, Bo Melton, and the mysterious Zane Anderson. So those players are back. But as we record, obviously, we know that nothing has happened yet outside of the two splashes the Packers made on Monday. Is there anyone out there as we record this that you would be banging the table for that remains unsigned that you would like to see the Packers pick up? And I guess to add to that question, do you think that the Packers have done enough? Are you comfortable with where they're at going into the draft, or would you have liked to see them be more aggressive in this window as we see the rest of the NFC North just collecting players like left and right?
Okay, here's my thoughts. No comparison to the rest of the NFC North, because like the Bears always win the offseason and then they come in fourth. So like let's pump our brakes on, just because you add players doesn't mean they turn out to be good and add value to your team. This goes for everyone. This goes for the Packers too. I don't know how these two signings are going to go. My thought process in free agency is like, when you're overly, first of all, the Packers don't need to be overly aggressive because they don't have that many holes to fill. You never know what phone calls they're making and who they would like and what the asking prices are and what they're willing to, you know, there's a lot of behind the scenes, I think, that we don't see. Like the Packers could, you know, have been in on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Although we did hear that some names that were rumors were actually not true. Like they never picked up the phone for DK Metcalf and they never picked up the phone for Davante Adams. So fandom is funny. I would really like to see them address edge still. That's the one that's left. I think that's a pretty obvious one. I don't love the idea of going into the draft and having to rely on the draft to pump up that room. And it was very like the Packers offseason formula is usually like try to fill the holes with both free agency and the draft. And they usually pick players if they can from both categories within the same position. So they've gotten an offensive lineman, they've gotten a cornerback. I think they still need an edge rusher because you never know how the draft is going to fall. That being said, all the big guys are gone. And some of those contracts, like I wouldn't have wanted the Packers mm-hmm. to sign guys for. I know everybody is like dying for Trey Hendrickson. Apparently the Bengals are asking for like an astronomical amount for him, which is fair if you value him, but also if you value him, why are you trading him? I don't think that's a real possibility. Like if it happened, that would be like Xavier McKinney level happy of like, I can't believe that just happened. I would love the Packers to sign Azeez Ojulari. I think he fits like right in. We were talking about this a little bit pre-show. Like he fits right into that body type. We were just talking about them getting slimmer at the position, more aggressive. He's right in that like RAS score, you know, like he's that kind of edge rusher that fits in. At this point in free agency, he would not be that expensive considering he would be in the second wave. I would love to know why. There's probably something there. Why? But he's the only name left that would make me happy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is probably my concern with the rest of this free agency class. It's a really, really good year to need defensive line help, at least in the draft. This is super, super deep at tackle or defensive tackle. So that bodes well. I could see the Packers double dipping there. Talked about this on the radio with Andy Herman, but I think over the last couple of days, I've completely talked myself into a guy like Calais Campbell, which I know it sounds weird as he's going into his 18th season in the NFL. He's going to be 39 when the season starts, but he's just an ageless wonder. And if you talk about changing kind of the attitude of your pass rush, he's the guy to do it. He's played in all 17 games the last two seasons, which is somehow improbable. It feels like, And his run defense grade would have graded out by PFF metrics first for all defensive linemen at the age of 38. So he's just a unicorn. And if the Packers could add him for 1 year or 2 years, and then, like I said, double dip in the draft and get guys, because, you know, Kenny Clark is unfortunately not 20 anymore, even though he sometimes seems like he is. It might be time to start really investing in the future of that position, which I think they tried to do with like guys like Wooden and Brooks, but I'm not sure they're ever going to be more than rotational pieces. So if you can bring in somebody, even on like a 1 or 2 year rental, and then invest in the draft, I would be okay with that. And I think that's kind of where like a Dante Fowler fits too. I could see the Packers looking at a vet edge rusher. I think Ojulari probably warrants like a bigger contract, like you're saying, because he's still only what, 25, or he turns 25 in June.
But I was going to say, we chose like guys on the polar opposite spectrum,
right?
Like the youngest guy and the oldest guy. I mean, I would love Calais Campbell for nothing more than what you said, is like that vet locker room presence. I feel like someone who's been in the league that long is just invaluable in that sense. He'd almost be like this team's Mercedes Lewis.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just like the guy who everyone rallies around. He's certainly not someone you're investing in long term, which to your point, like, you'd still need to go into the draft for that, but then it wouldn't put so much pressure on draft picks to perform immediately.
And I think the concern that I have with edge rush is just the room that you have now is good, but you're still hoping for a jump, right? We know who Rashawn Gary is. Lucas Van Ness is going into his third season. And, you know, he's still ascending, and that's not to say he's not going to have an incredible year, and he could just, you know, knock our socks off with the way that he plays in 2025, but you're banking on a lot. And even if the Packers go in and invest a first round pick in another edge rusher, you're hoping that they hit in the, and they're a key contributor from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that's a big ask, you know. Yeah. The draft is such a roll of the dice, and the Packers didn't need LVN to be a day one contributor. If they're taking somebody in the first round at edge, I kind of feel like they need them to be a day one contributor. And that's where you would like to see a free agent signing, so the pressure's off, because it gives guys like LVN time to develop. And I know they love Brenton Cox. I know they love Aaron Mosby, but those guys are never going to be your Rashawn Gary's, right? They're really nice rotational pieces. JJ Nagbari had a really nice season, but I just think that was probably where I felt the most disappointment, is just that a vet would take so much pressure off of whoever is drafted, because we assume they're going to draft edge relatively high. And I would hate for it to be another LVN scenario where they come in and it's like, oh boy, they are not having the impact that they need to, and then the line is struggling because of that.
I mean, if that happens, like, I think that room is in a really bad spot, in a really, really tough spot. And they came on a little bit towards the end of the season, but if you don't have a pass rush, I don't think you can get very far in the NFL. So they have to make smart decisions with this room this offseason.
Yeah, that we'll see what happens. And probably this time next week, maybe we'll talk about everything going on across the NFC North. We'll see if the Packers have added anyone else additionally to that room or to the roster in general. And then we'll start diving into some draft content, because we are about 6 weeks away, 5 weeks away from the draft, which is just absolutely insane. But any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
I'm just so happy to be back with you. So happy. Thanks everyone for giving us a little break. Appreciate your patience. I hope you're just as happy to see us back. And like Maggie said, we'll have all the off-season content for you now going forward.
Yeah, we promise no more hiatuses, potentially very brief ones, but you know, we'll be around. You'll be able to find us the rest of the way here. But thank you as always for listening to the show. You can find us at PWSS Podcast on YouTube at Packs What She Said. If you're listening to the audio format, please make sure you like and subscribe there as well. That helps us out. Perry's at Perry_Goldstein, me at Maggie J. Loney. And we'll be back next week to break down more free agency and look ahead to the draft. So thank you, as always, for listening. It's good to be back. And go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.